Welcome to 2819. I'm Sandra Dimas.
And I'm Daniel Almaguer.
Welcome back, Daniel. Very
Thank
glad
you.
To have you on.
Glad to be here.
You know, we're going to be talking about a super chill topic, the problem of evil,
yes.
And addressing it.
Sounds very relaxed.
I know. Yeah, kick your feet up. No, we're going to be talking about a serious topic here. The
yes.
problem of evil. It's a big obstacle for people who either are already Christians or for those who really can't explore that because the problem of evil is an obstacle for them. So.
Right. In Everyday Apologetics, Ted Cable discusses how we can work through doubts about faith.
And in Science Faith Connection, Jeff Swerink will be chatting with Hugh Ross about why God would allow natural disasters.
First up is Culture Talk. Sandra here will be interviewing Jeff Swerink about why God would allow earthquakes.
Welcome to Culture Talk. This is the segment where we talk about culturally relevant topics that you can use to start conversations about your faith. I'm joined today with astrophysicist Jeff Swerink. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Sandra. Looking forward to our time.
You know, we're talking in this episode about why God would allow earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk with you about that specific topic. Like, you know, why would that happen? So let's first talk about what earthquakes are. Like, what is happening when an earthquake strikes?
So the earth is built up of kind of a cool structure. There's a core in the center, there's this very large mantle part, and then right at the surface, compared to all of that, there are these very rigid plates, mm-hmm. and they're not all connected together. They're abutted next to each other, but they're not connected. And so as processes inside the earth churn up the rock in there, these plates move and they grind along. Sometimes they collide, sometimes they spread apart, sometimes they slip along. And all an earthquake is where those plates are moving next to each other. Energy's stored up, and when they move, that energy is released, you get an earthquake.
You know, you've written on this topic before, and I really love how you explain what it is, like what these plates are doing. You actually also tell a story about growing up in the Midwest, not ever experiencing them, and then you came to mm-hmm. to California. What was your first earthquake?
Well, it's funny because people in the Midwest tend to be terrified of earthquakes because uh-huh. they never happen in the Midwest.
Right.
And people out here tend to be terrified of tornadoes and storms. And I grew up with those, and it's like, I love those. But my first earthquake was actually the Hector Mine earthquake, which was like a 7.1 magnitude
yeah.
earthquake. We'd moved out here maybe on the order of 3 or 4 months, something like that.
Oh, pretty soon then.
Struck the middle of the night for whatever reason. Both my wife and I woke up just right before it hit.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way I can describe it, it's like, take your house and put it out on the ocean because the house is just moving up
right.
and down. So I got out of bed, walked in, checked on my kids, realized I can't do anything anyway. So went back and got in bed, and it all took about 30, 45 seconds, maybe a minute. And then we went back to sleep.
Yeah, they're pretty scary. I mean, I'm an LA native, so I've had plenty of earthquakes, and you just kind of, I won't get out of bed unless it's over, you know, 6.
Right.
But, you know, they are scary though. And people do wonder why we would have to endure those. So what are some of the benefits? I mean, we know now how they work, but mm-hmm. why would that be something that a good God would put on a planet? You know.
Well, no, that's a great question. And, you know, this whole question of why would God allow that, there's just kind of the pastoral of what happens mm-hmm. to somebody who deals with an earthquake.
Right.
But then when you look at what does it take to make a planet habitable?
Mm-hmm.
Plate tectonics, mm-hmm. which earthquakes are a consequence of, play an important role in that because these plate tectonics build mountains, they build all of the continental mass you have
mm-hmm.
is because plate tectonics has been happening for billions of years on the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And, as land is exposed to clouds and storms and all that, it all gets eroded and down into the oceans. If you didn't have plate tectonics, all of the land would disappear
mm-hmm.
and you'd end up covered in this water world. So
mm-hmm.
plate tectonics is a key feature of what makes Earth habitable because part of all of that rock and stuff coming up is that it serves kind of as a global thermostat. It keeps the temperature of the Earth right around the range where liquid water can exist. So
mm-hmm.
despite all the changes that have happened on Earth over the past 4 billion years, its temperature has stayed where liquid water can exist almost that whole time.
Mm-hmm.
It's really remarkable what plate tectonics does.
So I love that you're providing kind of this scientific perspective on why plate tectonics would be necessary on a planet that, if we say there's a good God, why would a good
mm-hmm.
God allow that? So you touched briefly on the fact that there's a pastoral component. So let's go there now, because anyone who knows anything about earthquakes can look at everything from Pompeii, where you have this massively destructive earthquake killing people instantly, mm-hmm. to Haiti. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hundreds and thousands of people have died even from a single earthquake. So how do you then tackle that question, mm-hmm. when you say, well, scientifically, this is why we need earthquakes on a planet that's going to host life? Well, how do we address the heart behind that of why would we be okay with a God who allows all of these people to die?
Well, there's no doubt that many people have died as a consequence of volcanoes and earthquakes, which mm-hmm. are both related to tectonic activity. We've got to be careful, though, that we're putting the quote-unquote blame in the right place. Right. I mean, yes, God created an earth where there's tectonic activity. But in dealing with people who've dealt with that, there's one, you know, people have just experienced loss. This isn't a time to come in and say, you know, I know your family's died, but earthquakes are really good. So, you know, that's just not the right time for that. You know, they need comfort, they need service, they need people to take care of them. And so, you know, when you've got tornadoes, when you've got people who've just suffered loss, help them deal with the grief of their loss. Mm-hmm. But then there is a little bit more of an academic question of why is all this going on and where is really the source of that? And, mm-hmm. and one of the things that I find interesting is that you can look at, you know, Vesuvius is a little harder, Pompeii is a little harder to take care of, but let's go look at just earthquakes in the modern era. Mm-hmm. You've got a relatively small earthquake that hit Haiti mm-hmm. that caused, you know, 250,000 people to die. Massive loss there. Mm-hmm. An earthquake that was anywhere from 100 to 1,000 times larger hit off the coast of Japan, and in the earthquake, virtually nobody died. You know, there were tsunamis that came afterwards, and so, but what's the difference between this relatively small earthquake that kills 250,000 people and a monstrous earthquake mm-hmm. that kills hardly anybody? Well, the Japanese know that these earthquakes are going to happen, and they prepare for it. Mm-hmm. You know, God has put us on this planet, but he's also given us minds and told us to rule over and subdue the planet, which means we have to respond to what the planet is going to do. We have to understand it and use it well. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of what we attribute to, oh, this is God's fault, is really humans mismanaging the creation that God has given us to watch over.
So even like where we decide to live and living in places that are going to put us in danger and having structures that are not sound and won't be able to sustain the effects of an earthquake, like that's mm-hmm. what you're leading to. Okay.
Well, and most of Earth's history, you know, you mm-hmm. talk about earthquakes, where most of the damage is in earthquakes is large structures that fall mm-hmm. down. It's been fairly recently that we've started to build large structures. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we live in California. I get really upset at all the codes because it adds money to any sort of work I want to do on my house. But those codes are there so that when I build the house and an earthquake comes, it stands and the people inside don't get hurt. So I may gripe at losing the money, but I appreciate, hey, this is something important to do because of where I live.
Right. Well, thank you so much for that. There's plenty more to unpack with this topic. If you want to hear more from Jeff, go to reasons.org and search for his blog, Impact Events.
As a Christian, are we supposed to have doubts? I mean, often science raises issues that cause us to wonder, is Christianity really true? How do we deal with those things? Well, we're joined today by Ted Cable, professor of philosophy of religion at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, to help us wrestle through some of those doubts and figure out how to resolve them. Ted, it's good to have you here today.
Thanks for having me.
I've enjoyed talking with you just throughout about some of the insights you have into how science and philosophy and theology all work together. I'm curious, have you had any doubts that have caused you to question, what is this true about Christianity and what do I deal with it?
Yeah, actually, I've got more serious questions that are non-scientific than scientific. Maybe that's because I'm a non-specialist, but the kinds of classical questions that have been around since the earliest days of Christianity sometimes cause me to ponder. Let me say right off the bat, it is normal for all people to question, and I'll just give you a hint where I'll head up at the end. Everybody has them, whether they're a Christian or not. Atheists have them. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's only the non-reflective person who doesn't have some doubts about their worldview, and the reason is simple. None of us are God. None of us are omniscient. None of us has an answer to every question, including the really important ones we wish we had, that are airtight, that nobody can pop a bubble in, and so on.
So in some sense, having doubt is it's a positive sign, or at least it's a sign that you're thinking about things wondering about things.
You're alive, you're breathing, and you care about things that are beyond your next meal or just having fun.
Right. And so what are some of those doubts that you've had to wrestle with?
It's interesting that typically the supposed hardest question for Christians is the philosophical one. How can God be all knowing, all powerful, and completely good, and yet there be evil and suffering in the mm-hmm. world? That one doesn't bother me as much. I've actually worked hard on it for a long time, and I'm convinced that though there are things that are mysterious, there are not things that are contradictory to the Christian mm-hmm. worldview, and that in fact its answers are far more satisfying than any of the other worldviews. But the kinds of questions that I do have that I think are serious are related to mysteries, like in the Bible, we look at passages in the Old Testament, like the conquest of Canaan, and when God demands the extermination of the Canaanites, of Joshua and the Israelites, it immediately raises questions in our mind, like, is this fair, women and children? What is up with that? Mm. I think those are the fair kinds of questions that if you were to ask me, can I give you a partial answer? I can. I can give you an answer that I can even sleep with at night, which I'm sure some listeners might say, well, I can't live with any of your answers. But what's helped me find resolution to these is something beyond just looking at weighing out the completeness or the incompleteness of my answers.
Which is?
Well, I think in the end you have to look at the total worldview that you have and the completeness of your overall worldview and the way it answers things satisfactorily in general. Not every person's going to feel this way. Many mm-hmm. people are going to find satisfaction and say, I can sleep at night without even having even partial answers for these things simply because I have this heart satisfaction in Christ. I don't see a problem with that. Mm-hmm. But I also think there are certain people who will find these questions raised in their mind, and they will not have as many answers as they might like. I think that I would fit in that category. When I was a younger man, as a teacher, as a pastor even, I couldn't admit that. Sometimes Christians feel like there's a failure of my faith if I admit that I have questions, mm-hmm. especially as a teacher or a leader. You feel like, oh my goodness, you know, I got to give them confidence by exuding confidence. And I think that's the wrong approach. It's not human. It's not even the way God has made us. So the way I find a resolution to this is I look at things. I look at what is it that I have that gives me confidence aside from this heart satisfaction I have in Christ. And in the end, Jeff, to me, I have so many answers, so much satisfaction. And when I compare that to these things that I have that I don't have as many answers that I might like in fullness, and then I compare all of that over here with what seemed to me the incredible lack of full answers that other worldviews have. At the end of the day, I say, you know what? I'm really not worried about it. I don't lose one wink of sleep over it.
Hello, Jeff Zwierink, and welcome to Science Faith Connection, the segment of our show where we explore important scientific ideas and see how they relate to the truth of Christianity. Today, I'm joined by founder and president of Reasons to Believe, Dr. Hugh Ross, and we're going to talk about natural disasters. Hugh, it's good to have you here today.
Well, thank you.
So natural disasters are things that, you know, people talk a lot about, wonder how could God do this? Is this part of God's plan? Is this evidence for or against God? So thought I'd just start off, how would you define natural disaster?
Well, it says in John 16, in this world you'll have tribulation. I mean, you got gravity, you got thermodynamics, you got electromagnetism. So these things will happen. And, you know, the Bible tells us there's good reasons for these laws of physics. As part of God's tool chest to eradicate evil and suffering once and for all. But God's in the process of doing that. So don't be surprised that, hey, your face kind of sags as you get older. That's just thermodynamics. You are going to get wildfires. You are going to get hurricanes. That's part of the natural order. It's temporary.
So wait a second. Let me push back a little bit. Yeah, so it's one thing, okay, you got gravity that keeps planets in orbit around the sun, that sort of thing, and it allows us to walk. But it doesn't seem to me that the connection between, okay, there's gravity, and therefore you have to have earthquakes or you have to have hurricanes where people die, that seems a little inconsistent there.
Well, it's not just gravity. It's a combination of all the laws of physics. If you got all the laws of physics operating, you're going to have our planet, if it's going to be habitable, it's got to be hot in its interior. You got to have plate tectonics. You will get volcanoes. You will get earthquakes. And if you want to have advanced plants and animals, you're going to need wildfires. Without the wildfires, you're not going to be able to recirculate the nutrients they need. The problem is you get too many wildfires, or you get wildfires that are much more problematic than God ever intended. And
it sounds like you're saying, and I don't think you are, but it sounds like you're saying, well, God had no choice. This is the way it's got to be. And so we're just going to live on a planet where we die because there's an earthquake that happens. Is that what you're saying?
No, God's got other options.
Okay.
But his primary reason for creating the universe the way he did and setting up the laws of physics of the way he did was to enable a process whereby evil and suffering could be permanently eradicated, while at the same time, our free will capacity to experience and express love would be exponentially enhanced. And it's kind of like what the two of us did. We went through college and university to prepare us for a future career. But I don't know about your experience, but there was a lot of suffering I went through to get my doctoral degree. But I understood that if I experience that little bit of suffering for a temporary season, it's going to prepare me for a lifetime career. And likewise, God's preparing us for careers in the new creation.
And so that's a different way of looking at it than I think I've looked at it than most people do. It's like there's this perception, okay, God created this great place for us to live. In fact, I think there are many Christians who would say, yeah, it was perfect, but because we sinned, God had to change things. But what you're saying, if I get it, is that this was never meant to be a permanent place.
Exactly.
This is preparation for that idyllic place where there won't be any earthquakes or things where people die just because of the natural order.
Yeah, there won't be gravity, there won't be thermodynamics. None of that will be necessary because there will be no possibility for evil ever to arise again. So God has us here for a temporary time. Or to put it another way, in Christianity, it's a two-creation model. The creation that we're in right now has been optimally designed to eradicate evil and suffering while we experience the minimum amount of discomfort and suffering. I always appreciated my professor saying, I'm going to put you through suffering, but I'm going to try to optimize the suffering so that you maximally benefit in the preparation for your future career. Not too little suffering, not too much. I see that in all these things we call natural disasters. They're all at the optimal level. Not too many earthquakes, not too few earthquakes. Just the right number and intensity to make our experience in this temporary place we're in as optimal as possible.
So your contention is God has designed it this way with earthquakes and tornadoes, if you will,
right.
that's the earth he has designed. Do we have any evidence that tornadoes, earthquakes, these sort of natural disasters predate humanity?
Oh yes, we definitely do. I mean, for example, you can see evidence of torrential rainstorms that go back 3 billion years, because you see the splash patterns and sediments telling us that there was these intense rain. We can go to astronomy and look at distant stars and galaxies and realize the laws of physics are the same back in the past as they are today. The Bible explicitly states there's been no change in the laws of physics. So yes, we'd expect that these things have always been here.
So how would you respond to Christians who say, you know, God created this idyllic creation where no harm could ever come to humanity, and it was only because humanity sinned that God then rearranged things or changed things as a punishment for humanity not following his commands?
Well, the fact that it says the ground is cursed because of you, it's not cursed because God changed the physics or the natural order. The ground became cursed because we humans decided to commit sin. And because of our sin, when we work the ground, it doesn't produce like God intended it to. Nothing changed with the ground. Nothing changed with the physics. what changed was us. And because we change, we tend to ruin things.
So in this model of the way of looking at it, that all Christians agree that there is going to be heaven, and in heaven there will not be the natural disasters, presumably.
Right, right.
So God's not constrained; He's got to have natural disasters. But in this model, He is using that to prepare us for this place. It almost sounds like this idea of I will want to do hard things for my kids so that when they grow up, they're prepared to take care of themselves financially or whatever. If I don't make them work and earn and grow and experience some of those hardships, they're not going to be prepared for that. That's kind of the scenario you're envisioning?
That's kind of the scenario I'm envisioning, but just like a loving parent, you allow your children to go through these things, but you do it in such a way that they're going to optimally benefit and minimally suffer. And that's the way God has set things up. But I think we also need to be aware, because of our sin, we can enhance what God never intended us to go through. So, for example, we have Jesus saying, don't build your house on sand, build it on the rock. Or to put it in a modern day perspective, don't send your aged parents to live in a mobile home on a beach on East Florida. I mean, we know hurricanes happen there. And if you live in a mobile home, your chances are you're going to have some unpleasant consequences. So be wise and understand. Mm-hmm. Just like here in California, I mean, we have earthquakes, but we have building codes. And so our homes are structurally designed to withstand earthquakes, you grew up in the Midwest, and it's like, the homes are cheaper there for one reason. They don't have all the building materials in them that homes here in California do.
Well, thanks, Hugh. I really appreciate your comments. You know, often when we think about natural disasters, we see that as, wow, the human destruction that comes, and we attribute that to God not being careful in planning. But I really love the way Hugh put that, that God has a plan for us, that place where there will be no suffering and death, that's in the second creation. This first creation is to prepare us for that, and the way God has created us, He gives us a way to understand and know how this creation works so that we can mitigate the damage done to humanity through these natural disasters. You know, I'd encourage you to go to reasons.org and check out Hugh's blog on this. It says, if there's a God, why are there natural disasters? It will give a brief introduction to it, as well as point you to some great resources to help you understand why these natural disasters occur and how God is using them to prepare us for eternity with Him.
We hope this episode has helped equip you to share your faith with compassion and confidence.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, I think we've learned a lot about how we can address the problem of evil.
Mm-hmm. Right. I thought it was really interesting to think of earthquakes, not in a sense of how devastating they are, but in a sense of looking at the overall world view of them and how necessary they are to take care of our planet.
Right. Yeah, it definitely makes the planet hospitable. But, you know, I love what Jeff said, too, about making sure that we're in that space with people who are grieving, because there's a lot of loss of life there. So we
right.
want to make sure that we touch on the sensitive part, the heart of the question, and really not coming across as so clinical, but offering some compassion there. So we hope that this episode has really helped equip you to answer some of those questions about the problem of evil. What we'd love to do is for you to subscribe to the show and to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are at 2819 Show. We'd love to hear your thoughts, maybe how you might address the question of the problem of evil.
And if you want the audio version of the show, you can search us on most major podcast services. Just search Reasons to Believe Podcast.
See you next week.
See ya.